Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
What's up, jerks? Welcome back to the Bad Christian Podcast. Thank you sincerely for clicking on the Bad Christian Podcast, this episode. I'm sorry, you probably didn't click on it. You tapped it with your thumb. Thank you for tapping with your thumb on the Bad Christian Podcast. We count it. We measured that tap. And while you're tapping, once you tap on over to emorymusic.com, because Emory is going out on the road in August very soon. It's going to be great. We just added Utah and Colorado, as well as we're playing in Texas with O'Sleeper and in Arkansas and in Georgia. So those tickets are at emorymusic.com. Tap yourselves over there. You're going to enjoy the show today. It's sponsored by Stamps.com. And right now, you can get $55 in free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week free trial when you go to Stamps.com and use the code BADCHRISTIAN. Before you do anything else, just click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and enter the code BADCHRISTIAN.
Oh, hell yeah, God showed up.
I don't give a shit what I put in my body.
You don't ever talk to me that way. So if you've never done oral, then you're extra virgin.
No, girl, it's my flesh.
I showed my dad my penis when I was 25 years old. You don't get more honest than that.
0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001 0001
road there, Joey.
Yo, I got you, Pastor Spencer. Don't know nothing.
Pastor Spencer doesn't know binary numbers, I think. He fell for a trap there.
Ones and zeros, Pastor Spencer.
What did you think that Joey was doing? Joey, what did you think Toby was doing there instead of counting 3, 2, 1 when he started saying ones and zeros? What did you think?
I thought it was just meaningless, and I'm not even sure what numbers he was saying. Was it -1, -2, -1?
No, he was just saying zeros. He was saying sequences of zeros and ones where he normally says 3, 2, 1.
Joey immediately takes anything and has to add negative.
Yep, he turns it negative
to it. Even with numbers, you immediately go negative. Even with fucking numbers,
that's funny. That's actually probably a real insight to some things in a brain. Like there was no negativity.
That's not true.
You generated the negativity.
There's nothing negative about a negative integer.
Yes, it is.
Negative about a negative.
Everything about a negative integer is negative. That's just what it is.
No.
Would you rather have somebody three ice creams or negative three ice creams?
What if someone's trying to lose weight and they say, "Hey, how much have you lost? Where are you at right now in the process?"
I've lost -3 pounds.
No, you didn't.
No, they haven't lost -3. They're at -3. That's a great thing. That's a situation where you like negativity.
Yes.
Yes.
That's not negativity.
Yes, it is.
No. That's
negative
very
weight gain is
two
what you're talking
different
about.
Different meanings do you of like negativity. It,
do you positively
good
think about
negativity and bad negativity?
Okay. Let's just see if we can get through this, and please try to understand me. Do you think you have positive feelings about negative weight gain? Is that what you say?
You.
Do you have positive feelings about negative weight gain?
I just don't understand you right now.
Okay. Anyway, those are binary numbers that Toby was using.
Wow.
Oh, goodness gracious.
All right.
It is.
Toby, you look really nice today. I don't know what it is about you. It's kind of like the facial hair that hasn't grown all the way in, and it looks like your hair's really nice. You look very handsome.
You guys are so good looking. Joey, I love the way you look.
Matt, does that annoy you if I tell you guys that? I know you don't like when I tell guests that, but how about you guys? Can I compliment y'all?
No, because it's also exactly filler, which is the reason you're doing it right
now.
That's
not true.
There's no reason to talk about how good looking people are that you're talking to. It's just filler.
I think he looks nice right now.
Matt,
holy cow.
In his defense, I promise you, I promise I'm not joking right now. I think Joey's being serious because he has a boner. And I am not joking. He has a throbbing, veiny, thick member that is excited about today's show. Well, now,
hey,
can I say something that's not filler?
That should be a new accountability method is you have something on your wee-wee, and anytime you get a boner, notification goes off on my phone and I call you. And I was like, what's the boner for? That'd be perfect.
Hey, actually, that's not too bad.
Yeah. What's that boner for?
You wear a ring around
Fitbit
your wiener.
Fitbit makes it.
Yeah. It's like a Fitbit. And if it stretches to a certain amount.
I mean, that's very easy. Like, that's a very simple existing technology. It's simpler than what Fitbit does with your sleep, for instance.
Wow. We might have just ended all cheating and, I mean, and all lust. Imagine if it was like
it would end cheating because if a notification went off that
slow down, man. Joey, calm down. Are you okay? Just slow down.
Your husband has removed his penis bit. No, please contact him punctually.
But it's for anybody, any dude that's trying to like not lust or get aroused or anything like that because they have a significant other. Imagine like you're just a gay guy and you're sitting in a room and all of a sudden Brad Pitt goes in and then it goes off. Mm-hmm. It just starts. Yeah. What if there's an actual alarm attached to it to embarrass you?
For extra negative reinforcement. Even in public, that would be a real dystopic thing. If it was, spouses would like that story you did in the damn news about how people's smart homes and smart devices are intrusive and oppressive and used for abuse. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine a mean wife who had a boner meter on you? And she's calling,
Hey, mean stuff is getting more and more prevalent. I literally just right before the podcast, I read an article. It's from Hustle, which I love. It's an email I get and online news. Matt had one of the folks from Hustle on Break It Down episode. You should check it out. But there's actually a thing now the alt-right folks have created called Hatreon. And you can give money just like Patreon to to people that you that are doing things against others and stuff like that. Isn't that crazy? The world is getting meaner and meaner and meaner. And
no doubt.
I really believe social media in the beginning, it was built to be like, we're going to be friends and closer and stay more connected. Mm-hmm. And what you're realizing is you hate everybody. Mm-hmm. You don't care about anybody. The more you know them, the more you hate them. Is there anybody that the more you know them on social media, you just, you love seeing them in real life even more? I don't think it works that way.
Yeah, but only in certain things. Like people in the BC Club that met and got married, for instance, would say that, right?
They're headed for a divorce.
but in general, you're right, because here's the thing.
I'm kidding.
When you see things like humans and people in real life now that you see online all the time, you're like, I get it. They're a real person and all that stuff. That really plays into the same thing as like why it's hard to be mean to a kid or a baby. Because there's something about that. If you want to think about it, I wonder that, like, we say the social media is just the wrong way, but I wonder if it's possible to look at it from your point of view that you actually do hate people, and now you have the ability to see clearly for what it is. Not that you're missing the embodiment part. It's just now that we've removed those real blinders, the part that make us feel, what obligated to other people in our physical presence. Yep. As soon as you take that away, the real truth is you fucking hate everybody. That is true.
I've been the only person that's been honest my whole life about it.
That's right.
Now, you know what else reveals it? Reveals your true nature is pets. And we got a puppy. We have a puppy now.
Oh, no.
It was crazy. We'd been looking for a while, and we lost our dog Maybell several months ago. And it was really hard, and we even tried a dog for a little bit, and it just wasn't the right fit, and it just wasn't. So we stopped for a while, and then this last couple of weeks, we're like, okay, maybe we're ready now. Let's get a puppy and just see what we can do. So it was really funny. We rode out into the middle of nowhere, middle Tennessee, and this lady, she lived out in the country, wrote just out in the field, this yellow house, and the whole house smelled like animal feed. She lived on a farm, so everything smelled like horse feed or cow manure or anything. It's just a real farm, and it was a little bit dark in there. I was like, oh, God, did I ride out? Before I met the lady, I was like, did I just kill my family? But we rode out there, and these two adorable little puppies, and we were like, oh, man, they are just so sweet. And I was like, we can't leave them here. Let's just – so we took one.
Yeah. Felt so bad for them. You had separated the young siblings.
Separated them completely because the other one was like a little bit of a biter. I was like, I don't know about this.
And so from their mother, right? You took them away from their mother?
Yeah, but the woman said the mother didn't even really like them that much. I was like, oh, that sucks. That motherhood and fatherhood in the animal kingdom, it ain't the same.
Not the same.
They ready to get rid of you real quick, very quick. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. But so we got this little dog. She's a Jack Russell boxer mix.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, she is. She is kind of. She's like really cute. She's name. Really funny. She's really.
What's
loves
the name?
Dottie.
Dottie. I like that too.
Yeah. It came down to Mavis or Dottie, and Dottie was the name that won. So that we let the kids. They've never had a puppy. They've only had Maybelle, who was, you know, 6 or 7 years old by the time Ruby was born. No, or 2 or 3 years old. I'm sorry. By the time Ruby was born, so and she wouldn't have remembered her anyway. So by the time they knew anything, she was way old. So we finally got a puppy, but it definitely shows you, like, she whimpers at night in her crate, and, you know, she pees and poops everywhere. She's only 5 weeks old, so there's nothing you can do. And it's funny, like, this little adorable thing can just instill unreal anger and hatred in my body because I just, like, I'm trying to get her on the pee pad, but she walks off and then pees or shits right on by the kitchen table or dining room table, all this stuff, and it's really frustrating. And you can even... But the one thing that we do that kind of levels the playing field. So when she whimpers at night, I learned this with Maybelle. This is a real technique. When they whimper, if they hear a loud noise outside their crate, they get scared.
Mm-hmm.
And so they whimpering. So I turn on the vacuum cleaner right beside
That's
her
what you're supposed
crate.
To do is make sure they know that you are not present. So you hide. You have to be not in the equation, or they think it's only when you're around. So if you hide and throw a tennis ball at their crate and they can't see you, or turn on the vacuum or hit a switch that happens like a ghost is doing it, that works great.
Right. Yep. So I sat in the room real at night. We've been asleep for a long time, and I let her whimper for a long time, and I don't move, and then I turn it on, and yeah, it works. I mean, it really does work. She just stops whimpering and goes back to sleep, and she's fine because she thinks I'm about to die. So so she gets to stay alive and we get to go back to sleep, but it's been pretty cool. The kids really like her, and it's already the thoughts of, like, if we want to go on vacation, you got to get somebody to watch her, you got to do all this stuff. But I never thought I'd say this, but we're definitely a real animal family, I guess. I mean, having a dog, it already does feel better. I mean, even with all the work and
your marriage is coming together, kids feel loved again.
I know
everything.
It's brought us back together. So I'm excited. Matt, you still are no way no dog.
Look,
right?
when my youngest kid is the age of your youngest kid today, then I'll have a dog. But if there's ever a time period in a dog lover and dog owner for life's life, which I've had a dog at every moment I've ever lived, if there was ever going to be a few years to pause strategically dog ownership, it'd be when you have infants.
I agree.
Not me not wanting a dog.
I agree.
Hopefully, maybe there's a 2 or 3 year window in my life where I don't own a dog, and I hope it's when I have little children. That's all. I'd like to line those two things up, and then we'll get another dog when the time is appropriate. So, Joey, I wanted to ask you. You got to talk to Scott Mellinger from Zayo recently, right?
Yeah, I sure did. He's become a friend in the past. Anytime I want to listen to a dumb atheist on Pastor with No Answers, I call him up, and he actually proves me wrong every time. He's like a super smart, polished, nice guy.
There's not a lot of dumb atheists. I guess that's the issue. You know what I mean?
That's the issue.
That's the problem with those atheists. They're all relatively intelligent. So I don't know if that necessarily gives them credence for their view that smart people hold this view, but it at least is dangerous to run into one because there are not many dumb ones.
Yep.
So did y'all sort out if there's a God or not?
You know, I just spent more time ridiculing, and because everything he said just didn't make any sense, and I'm so convinced.
It can't. He's an atheist.
Yeah, exactly. He can't. Like, yeah, he's blind.
I'm so convinced, and I see so clearly, it's just hard talking to someone like that.
Well, you know, hey, these atheists.
But in other news, Instagram is the place to follow him and Zayo, because they are going on tour this fall. They're releasing a 7-inch this fall, and next year another full length is coming out. So it's Instagram.com/Zayo Band.
Well, yeah. So the thing is that these atheists and Scott and these people, they keep doing interviews, and they're always these real softball things. So we thought it'd probably be a good opportunity to get somebody hard hitting in there and make them actually, you know,
that's what Joey Spencer
do the real
is.
Work. So we'll have a little segment of Grilled.
This is
Grilled with Joey Spencer. He asked the tough questions no one else would.
All right. Well, we are here with someone who I consider to be a friend, Scott Mielinger. And say that again.
Did I say it correctly?
You keep interrupting me, man. Did I say it correctly?
No.
What is your last name?
Mel. Like if... You're a male.
Okay.
Mellinger.
Okay, cool. All right. Mm-hmm. Awesome, man. All right. So let me just start here. Scott, I'm a Christian, and there's obviously nothing that you're going to say that's going to make me change my mind. And I'm actually even a little on the edge right now, because I think that I may be opening a door for the devil to have like more influence in my life by just speaking with you. So just be patient with me if I come across a little nervous. I'm not kidding you, atheist motherfucker. Like, see, I'm just nervous, man. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
I understand when small intellects talk to like larger ones that it does kind of get a little problematic.
Gotcha. But you're not that small of an intellect. That's not the problem. It's just that it's just the okay. So I don't want to just come right out and say that you're dumb to start things off, but no God? Like, seriously? Like how ridiculous? Where are you even coming from? Like, I don't even get you.
Yeah. Maybe one, like, if there's these things, I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
Yeah.
There's usually, I know there's one that you guys care about a lot, but there's a lot of them that have been made throughout, you know, how many years, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's these things called books that you can read. When you read those and you get away from the one book that all you guys kind of just consider the only book to read,
right,
it does kind of help open you up to a little bit more than you know, 2,000-year-old transcripts that probably might not even be right in the first place.
Okay. You are, I do my interviews differently. Like, I just say exactly what's on my mind. You're coming across extremely condescending right now.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to be as nice as possible.
Okay. Well, I guess, I don't know. It's not working, but how do you explain then, getting on books, by the way, how do you explain zero contradictions and zero mistakes in the Bible? Like, explain that one. Explain that one.
Explain zero contradictions.
Zero contradictions, no mistakes. You tell me how that came together.
You might have me here, Joey. I don't think anybody's ever argued that they didn't have, you know, I think there's enough argument out there for how many mistakes and how many contradictions there are. I don't really know that we need to get back into that. Do we need to do that one?
Hold on one second. Hey. Nah, it's the, hold on, let me cover my mic. It's the atheist dummy that I was telling you about. Yeah. Okay. All right. Sorry.
No, I didn't actually even hear that.
Oh, cool. Cool. It wasn't for you, but,
good.
All right. So explain, all right. I'm just trying to wrap my head around this no God thing. Explain all the natural disasters that he sent to punish like the evil in this world. I mean, we see it all over the place. There's hurricanes, there's big tidal waves,
typhoons,
tornadoes, earthquakes. So if there's no God, then who's doing the punishing?
Well, actually, there was that. Did you hear about the volcano ball of fire that hit into that boat? That it was like a tour boat, and there was like a big ball of lava that came into the boat from the roof.
Are you being serious?
Oh yeah, this literally just happened.
All right, now explain this to me again.
So, you know how the one volcano in Hawaii has been erupting and they've had to like get people out of their houses and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So there was a tour boat that was near one of those, near the volcano, and it literally shot out of the volcano like a ball of lava and it landed in the boat. Like hellfire coming down.
Like the people? People?
Well, I don't know how many people got injured, but it was almost like a personification.
Now imagine the filth that's going on in their lives for God to take those measures. Holy cow. Man,
yeah,
that is extremely relevant to this conversation. I appreciate that.
So yeah, I wanted to bring that up.
So you do see how flawed your point of view is, given that God that can't
obviously
happen. Right.
That he threw that. It was almost like he might have, it was like a snowball fight.
Right.
He was doing this.
Yeah.
And then he threw it at that boat, because obviously all those people probably were atheists.
Yeah.
Right.
Atheists or just child molesters, or, you know,
child. Okay.
That's who I think of when atheists, child molesters.
I'm glad that we have that clear.
Yeah, totally.
So
speaking of child molesting and those sorts of things, since you don't believe in God, it has got to be kind of convenient for you. You can take advantage of nice people, not care about other people's needs, and basically just be a self-centered asshole, right? I mean, because when I think of atheism, I think, well, that would be somewhat of a perk. I just do what I want to do because I'm a collection of molecules.
Yeah.
Your life?
You could look at it that way, or you could look at it as like the humanist perspective, where I actually care more about people because I don't think they're just immediately flawed from
your
birth.
Molecules are not making sense right now.
Yeah, it's
kind of like spontaneous stuff going on. You don't even have any control, do you?
No.
You're kind of a robot.
I'm sort of a robot to my inner molecule.
Do you ever feel, or let me ask it this way: do you have, or how do you have any standard? Like, if I say, if I'm looking at someone, I'm like, oh, I hate that guy, I want to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
My next thought is, wait, God doesn't want me to kill him. And then I don't. And then I actually love that person. You don't have that. So when you think, I hate that guy, I want to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just kill him?
Who says I haven't?
Oh, snap.
Or I could always just come home and play Grand Theft Auto 5, which I'm doing while you're talking to me because it's annoying. But I guess I could kill them without any care.
Do you ever? So you are admitting that then?
Oh, I never admit anything.
Okay, cool. This is worthless then. All right, but no offense. Do you ever feel left out when you see all the good in our country? And you realize it's because we're a Christian nation and we have God's blessing on us, and yet you are not a part of that. You're not a Christian. You're in a Christian country that's doing lots of good, godly man as our president, but you're not a part of that.
Yeah, he's unbelievably, isn't he?
Do you feel left out?
Pretty fascinating. Maybe the better term would be I feel left behind.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Wow. Mm-hmm. You make a good Christian sounding atheist.
Yeah. A Kirk Cameron-esque atheist is what you,
All right. So my last question, if someone wanted to do an experiment and they would pay you $90,000 a year.
Yes.
And the experiment is for an atheist to start a Christian ministry and to see it to success and consistently successful, whether it's a church or a Christian affiliated non-denominational nonprofit or whatever it is. But they say, look, I'll give you $90,000, but you just have to pretend to be a Christian. Like, would you do that? Because you don't have any moral standards. You can't be worried about lying or cheating people or anything like that. So would you take people up on that deal?
Probably. I mean, I think that's probably what's happening anyway. So
you got to get yours, right?
Yeah, I got to get mine. I mean, I could pay off some bills.
I hear you.
Atheists have some bills.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Yeah. All right. So one thing that I neglected to mention before we even started is that you are a part of one of my favorite bands, Zayo. And y'all's first album was very much so spirit-filled and Christian. I don't think you were a part of that one, which makes a whole lot of sense now after talking to you. But the second album was kind of spiritual and biblical, but it wasn't it wasn't edifying. And then from that point on, you're talking about God dying and that sort of horrible stuff. So I'm not totally with you guys anymore. I actually had to throw away some of my Zayo albums, but at the same time, I am curious, what's the latest with you guys? Like, I do want to know that because I love my enemies and I love evildoers, and it's just kind of my way of heaping coals on your head right now, but it is in love.
It's okay. Did you burn the records or did you just throw them away?
I cracked them.
Cracked them. It's yep. Like, okay. Yep. Were they CDs?
Yes, or, they were CDs. And then there were a couple of vinyls.
So, okay. A couple. Okay.
Yep.
Well, yeah, what we're doing now, something that I don't think is going to come near you, so you won't have to argue with yourself to go or not.
But yeah.
We're going to do a little run in September with two other fellow bands that I don't think are in your wheelhouse.
Right, right. So, like Satanic?
Not Satanic. Maybe. I think all of us, so, man, there might be a little bit of Satanic bands in there. I don't know. Actually, no. But yeah, we're doing a little run in September through the East Coast and into the Midwest.
Yeah.
And then we have a split 7-inch coming out around that same time.
Yeah.
And that's going to be definitely not in your wheelhouse as well.
Yeah.
Couple more, maybe another 7-inch at the end of the year. And then we're going to put a record out next year, a full length, with songs dedicated to you, Joey.
Where should we direct people?
Like Facebook or
I guess Facebook, Instagram, because Instagram needs to, our Instagram numbers need to be built up.
Oh, so, all about them numbers. You sound like a good Christian now, boy.
All right, man. Well, I tell you what, after this interview, I'm going to reiterate what you just said, letting people, I'm taking a risk, honestly, because you do have the potential of leading people astray, but I'm putting that out there, folks. You can check this stuff out. You may be led astray, but it may be somewhat of good music. So I'll reiterate that after you and I hang up. How about that?
Thank you. I appreciate
all
that.
Right. See, I'm just going to be honest. I am disgusted by you, but I do love you. So it's like I love you, but I just hate every action of yours because it comes from kind of a wicked heart. But that's okay. I love you.
Yeah, my heart is, it's the same as yours.
All right, Joey, thank you for the grilled. What's the secret to that? I mean, how do you prepare for such things like that? It seems real intense, man.
Yeah, you just have to go in with a I'm not going to take shit from anyone
attitude.
I hear
you.
I think that's the key to being a good Christian. Commit to yourself. Yeah. There's some times where I'm like, I know what I need to say, so I'm going to just type it into my computer. I'm going to just say it word for word, and that's helpful too.
And it's easy when you're talking to somebody like that that is just so misled by Satan.
Oh, yeah, blinded.
I was trying to give him the low-hanging fruit ABCs of philosophy that, you know, has to do with God and Christianity. So
he doesn't even understand that Satan uses music. My God.
Well, the problem with Scott is he doesn't understand that he's being used by Satan.
Right.
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. Is he just doesn't realize that, because if you're not with God, you're against him. And so obviously that has to mean that he's being used by Satan.
Father God, we pray against Scott Mellinger right now.
That's right.
Whatever agent is inside of him, come out. Come forth and come out.
Good luck to Zayo and them on that. One of the best bands of all time. But an antidote for all that would be, how about a Christian book? How about we bring on Kenny Luck, who's a Christian author. Kenny wrote, and this is true, Kenny wrote Every Man's Battle. I think a lot of people know that. He was involved on that team that did Every Man's Battle and all the subsequent stuff that. And he has a new book now called Dangerous Good, The Coming Revolution of Men Who Care. So, you know, dude stuff, in other words. Christianity doing dude stuff. So,
heck yeah, dude stuff.
So we'll have him on in just a second. Toby, you got something to tell us first?
Oh, Matt, do I got something to tell you? It's really funny. We had a lot. We're going, as most people should know by now, we're going to Joshua Fest this weekend, and I needed to ship out a lot of vinyl to get it all the way to California from Tennessee here. And if I didn't have stamps.com, I'm telling you, it would have been a nightmare carrying all this heavy vinyl packages. There's like 50 to a box of just awesome records that will be sold at Joshua Fest. And getting to be able to weigh it at my house, do all the postage, and then I just walk into the post office, set it down, and leave. I mean, there's almost no better feeling. I mean, it is amazing because you can do every single thing that you need done that you used to have to do only at the post office. Now you can do it right at your house. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk 24/7 when it's convenient for you. That's what's so cool. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package using your own computer and printer, and the mail carrier picks it up. You can drop it off at the post office, or the postman will come right to your door and get it for you. No, it couldn't be any easier. I'm just telling you. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. So right now, our Bad Christian listeners, you can use the code BADCHRISTIAN for this special offer. It includes up to $55 free postage, a digital scale, and a 4-week trial. So what are you waiting for? Go to stamps.com right now. Before you do anything else on earth, make life so much easier for yourself. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Bad Christian. That's stamps.com and enter Bad Christian. Well, Kenny, we're glad to have you on the show, man. You've lived an interesting life. I was reading your bio here, which is crazy. I mean, you've done a lot of stuff, so we want to get into it, and a lot of the men's ministry stuff you've done, and then in your new book, and even talking about toxic masculinity. But the craziest thing that I read right from the get go is that you were sneaking or getting over to Russia and sneaking in like Christian materials or something. You got caught by the KGB, a spy.
Yeah, when you're 20 and you're in college, you think you're invincible. So you're like, all right, I'll sign up for Project North Star. And yeah, I got the material in the mail. I had to burn it. Literally, I had to light it on fire, put it in the thing. Your eyes only. So they took 25 Christian guys and took them to Colorado Springs, trained them in how to elude KGB. They stuffed your sidelines of your suitcase with Bibles and materials. And they literally labeled you a tourist group, dropped you off in teams of five in Moscow in the 80s. Oh,
just so to distribute the stuff. So that's crazy.
Dude. Oh, dude, and I'll tell you, I saw things there that I've never seen happen in the States. I saw just literal miracles. I mean, I tell my kids the story of being on a train, seeing people. We were totally hungry. We had no money. And these two weird Polish-looking gals helped us eat. They dropped themselves off in Krakow, Poland. We saw them go. They reappeared on the train to keep us from getting kicked off in the next city. Like, crazy. So were they angels? Were they? But you know what I mean? I've been with persecuted Christians a lot and in those settings. So you just see stuff.
That's crazy.
See stuff happen that you don't see here.
Then you had run-ins with the KGB at all? Did you get busted?
That was, we were on our way out. We were in on the Black Sea. We were on our way out. We were filming undercover, like, video, like, hi, my name's Kenny Luck, and I'm in country, and we just were here and there, and blah, blah, blah. And we didn't know it, but we were in next to an insane asylum. It was like this psychiatric hospital for old people. So they got scared. Somebody saw us and they called the cops. And then when they called the cops, they found out we were Americans. And then they brought us into this room. And then the KGB guy came in and he interrogated us. And here's the weird thing. Okay. We all journaled that experience. We got let go after about an hour and a half. And, you know, he threw his gun on the table and it was like all this bravado. And, but we came home and all these people had woken up in the middle of the night to pray for us for some reason. And we all dialed it back in. That was the day and that was the time.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, I know exactly what you mean because Toby and I play in a rock band and we once snuck some of our merch in through Australian customs to sell it to fans. So right there with you.
There we go. Yeah. Fans.
So we've done some wild shit too.
Yeah, that's good.
A little different. So we had your own, I wanted to get into a few things. Like I said, what was the new book called? And what's your new book that's coming out?
New book is called Dangerous Good.
Dangerous Good.
It comes out on July 3rd. Yep.
And it's about masculinity and, I guess being a Christian and maybe even the toxic masculinity term. I do a thing called the true man experience, where I go to different cities and meet in houses and meet with men and have so your story here resonated with me. But I wanted to go back a little bit before we get to this book and how you got to talking about toxic masculinity and where, you know, masculinity is today. Because it says in your bio, you started Every Man's Battle. Is that your creation?
Yeah, that was that ministry. I was working in mental health, and I was getting all these calls from Christian guys who were guzzling porn. And through the mental health line, I'm like, okay, we got to do something. Mm-hmm. We got to do something that A, brings the issue to the surface, B, makes it okay to talk about, C, somebody has to address it. So I was working with Stephen Arterbird at the time, and I just went to him and I said, we got to start something, because this is slavery for a lot of dudes. And so we start, it was called New Liberty at first, then it became Every Man's Battle. And then the book was written, and then, but the program is still out there and helping thousands of guys kind of get out of that quagmire.
Mm-hmm. I did that book in probably 2003 or two. I'm not sure where that is in the timeline, but that's when somebody gave it to me. I was like, oh, is there going to be answers in here? Is this going to work? I mean, anything, because I feel like I'm just doing terribly. I read that book and went through it. I will say now, looking back on it, and I know some other, I think it's maybe a little bit more controversial, and I don't know if I feel the same way about it now, because there's one side effect of that I think I have to own up to, at least, and I think is common, is that it did at least send a message about women that is like, they are dangerous or problematic or get avoided. And I think some of that really winds up leading to situations where I would never be around a woman or wouldn't hire one or wouldn't work with one. And I think that's that. I mean, do you look back on that?
I totally get what you're saying. Yeah. It's like the pendulum swing. It's like, well, now I have to become, you know, a monk and an ascetic, and I have to have all these boundaries, and I can't be with a woman alone. That's not normal life. That's just not normal life. So, but it's how people attach to stuff like that. You know, I thought when we first published the book that it was, you got to understand, it's 2003. No one's talking about this. I think there was one book called Fatal Attractions by Bill Perkins. So this was like, we were getting hammered by the fundamentalists. Like, why are you talking about that?
Talking
and
about
this
it,
is too racy. And, you know, because Steve talks about driving his car into a pole, you know, having a mental happy meal, looking at a girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he crashes his car. And so it's actually kind of like the book was titillating, literally, to be something that kind of magnetized men. Yeah, that is me. That's what's going on. But it's how people attach to that stuff. So, you know, if you're totally into it and you read a book like that, sometimes the pendulum goes way too far the other way and you just become weird.
Was that in response to so you're saying that guys were looking at porn, they were checking out women? I mean, still today, that's just kind of, it's almost normal. I think that's one of the biggest weaknesses I've seen, or within the Christian handling of this, is it almost seems like nobody ever, especially like you were saying, early 2000s, back to when 80s and 90s when I grew up, nobody talked about sex. I was talking to, I guess it was Joey, we were riding in the car here today. My parents never had a sex conversation with me ever. I never talked about it. I found my dad's porn. I found porn. It's really crazy. Back in the day, I felt like you could find porn almost anywhere. Like I've walked into the woods before, and there'd be like a porn mag or something like that.
Any dad's bottom dresser drawer under the.
Exactly. So
You're talking. Listen, guys, you're talking to the guy who worked at Oak Tree Liquors from my freshman year to my senior year. I ran the store. It was empty a lot of the time, especially on Sundays. I guzzled porn on Sundays. I mean, I was 13, 14, 15 years old. You know, the rack of literature, time on my hands. Once all the Coors and Bud went out of the cooler for guys picking up beer for the game, it was totally boring. You can only dust the Chablis and wine bottles so much. You can only restock. You can only eat so much beef jerky. You can only have so many Snicker bars. You can only bag so much ice. And so that's my testimony. You know, I was totally all in before the internet. And then, you know, then I became a Christian when I was 17. And now I'm a first generation Christian. It's like, oh, wow. Okay. So what do I do? Yeah. How do I deal with this? I just have a feeling like probably shouldn't be doing that. So, I mean, that's my background. And so I'm real open about it. I talk about that all the time.
But yeah, that's what I was saying. Like it's one of those things where nobody ever talked about it. So you got pushed back. So you wrote a book and a program to address that situation. And then do you think, like, when you guys were writing that, it was just, well, we got to do something. We got to write something here because nobody's talking about it at all. Cause now times have changed.
Yes.
Everybody talks about sex now.
Yeah.
Almost, you know what I mean?
That's right. Well, you know, porn, you don't have to find porn. Porn finds you.
Yeah.
At that time, it was like, wow, we're wading into the deep water. Mm-hmm. And we were fine with that because, you know what? When you work in mental health, you're talking to people who are going to kill themselves, people who are depressed, suicidal. I mean, I must have done in my mental health career probably 5,000 psychosocial assessments. That's people who are so hurting. They're so depressed and everything is so fatal and final that they want to kill themselves. And so that was our world. And, you know, this was a part of the dude's world. You know, this was always a part of it, you know, in a lot of guys' lives. So
are you still working with that organization? Are you still doing Every Man's Battle?
Yeah, no, I refer people. I refer people to Every Man's Battle all the time. I believe in the program. Steve Arterburn and I are friends, a New Life show. But no, I do Every Man and I pastor.
See, yeah. I think the tough thing about that whole struggle is the fact that it can be such an intense addiction. So what people do is they pair that sort of, well, you know, addiction is super bad, is super unhealthy, but then they put sex on like top of the list as far as stuff that you should feel bad about. Because like, I wish someone would have told me, hey, pornography and sex can be an addiction, but of all the sins, give yourself a break with this one and just do the best you can.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I heard that there was some, at some point that book got some flack, people accusing you guys of the shortage of grace. You think that's a fair assessment or not so much?
What do you mean the shortage of grace?
Like just basically saying, man, this comes down too hard. What about the grace of God sort of thing?
Oh, gosh, no. That's just weird people. No, I mean, because both Steve's testimony, my testimony, man, we know.
Right.
We're trophies of grace, to use a cliche. You know, I mean, Steve paid for his girlfriend to have an abortion at Baylor, you know. I know who I am. I know where I came from. I know myself, you know, and so that would be the statement of somebody who just didn't know us.
Yeah. Yeah. Or didn't read the book.
Really?
How do you stop the pendulum from swinging, though? And this might even lead us into your new book, though. Like that idea of how do you respect women? How do you not treat them as sexual objects only when, like when you do have that porn addiction, or when you do, when you are trying to be a good guy and also struggling sexually, whatever your thoughts are, if it's, you know, masturbating all the time.
You know
that
what?
Stuff.
That's a great question. I can just tell you my own journey. You know, you do. There does have to be, you do have to rearrange your life in such a way so that, you know, that sin doesn't look as good as it used to. I mean, you have to do some things, have some disciplines. And I know for myself, I battled that into my 30s, like 15, 16 years, where I had to kind of rebuild a lifestyle. It's like, well, you know, I'm not gonna undress that woman with my mind. I have to refocus my mind. I have to maybe consume a little more Bible, memorize scripture. You know, I did everything that I knew that I could do to love God with my mind. And so, but it was a discipline. It wasn't like there's always that tension underneath. But then after a while, when you commit to a certain lifestyle, how you're going to think and what you're going to let your eyes see and stuff like that, there is a moment of freedom. And I remember it was in my mid-30s. I mean, this is whatever, 17, 18 years after I just kind of had to, well, I'm going to chew the cover off the couch and I'm going to try to discipline my eyes. I'm going to try to do more Bible, try to be accountable to some dudes. That's when it was like, it was almost surreal. It was like, okay, this is just who you are now. The tension that goes with sexual temptation just it wasn't there as much. I think because, you know, I had kind of a lifestyle that really didn't make it look great anymore. And I love my wife and kids and all that stuff. So, you know,
yeah. So
but is there,
I think the thing that that people are critical of, or that I'm critical of what I'm trying to say is that there's this whole book that everybody in a Christian guys in a generation read that was, I'll even attest to, very helpful to help me. It just was behaviorally helpful. But it also taught me that women are sexual objects that are dangerous. And that is, they find that harmful. Yeah. That they have been put in and I encounter that I know category, tons of women who feel that way. Like that book taught all these men to be scared of me, and that's why I can't get this job, and that's why I can't be in, you know, all that stuff.
Right. No, that I'm sure that happened. That's just the broken, messed up aspects of, you know, a book like that just coming out trying to do something good and people over attaching to it. Because I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that I turned into a guy who, you know, objectified women and just like, I can't be near you. And I can't work with you and I'm going to hire an ugly assistant.
I mean, it's such a double-edged sword though, because there's a lot of guys that would say, hey,
you're too pretty.
There's a lot of guys who would say,
I can't work with you.
There's a lot of guys who would say, I bounce my eyes because I'm trying to honor women.
Right.
I mean, it really is a tough one. And I love how he answered it. We're just a fall. When there's a fallen world, however you want to call it, jacked up world where people do wrong, there's a lot of times there's just no simple solutions. I mean, I don't know if you could put out a book like that really helping guys without that dual message. I don't know if
here's the problem. It is a catch 22. If every guy followed that rule, like turned your eyes, you know,
it's called bouncing
your eyes, whatever that might be, right?
Bouncing stars.
What if that actually led to less a sexual assault or something? It might not, but
be a woman. Put yourself in a woman's shoes. When I see men, they are constantly
moving their head the other direction. I know. That's what I'm getting at. That's what I'm saying. So, like, it's like we're doing a physical response to a spiritual heart mind issue, but at the same time, how do you navigate that? Because you do want to respect women. You do want to work with women.
That's what the hijabs are all about, too.
But the idea here, probably even with every man's battle, that y'all's goal was to, in your thoughts, wasn't to demean women. It's probably to honor women, right? Like you want to honor your wife. You want to honor other women.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. Like even, you know, if I'm driving up the hill to my house and there's a gal running in Lululemon pants and a short halter, and I can go, all right, I see it. It's not a sin to be tempted. And that was the message of Jesus was tempted in every way. That's what the Bible teaches. And so I refuse to feel guilty when tempted because Jesus was tempted. And so, but I'm also called to love God with my mind. So do I have, like I called it earlier, a mental happy meal and just go, you know, and dwell on that and scenario build and say, wow, she would really want me and create a scenario in my mind. And no, I'm not going to do that. And so you fight like Jesus fought.
Toby's mental happy meal is like a real happy meal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a real happy meal.
I have way more lust.
It's got a 42.
Yeah. At 42, I have way more lust for a real happy meal now than Lululemon. But that's the thing, too. I think what people don't address either is that there is something. This isn't just like is there not some natural capacity for men to be this way? That doesn't make it right. But like, is it testosterone? Is it something like, I think a lot of women make a very valid point. Why do you even have to look at me like that? What if you just look like, oh, she's exercising? Or why does it immediately go sexual?
Then you trace that to evolution.
I have done so much research on this. You know, men are visually stimulated.
Boys will be boys, but
always will be, always be. You're going to have missile lock. It's going to happen. I mean, like Chrissy and I have been married 30 years yesterday. And now, you know, it just kind of goes with maturity and age. You're just like, wow, did you see what that lady's wearing? You know, it's like, we're talking about things in the open. God, that person's gorgeous. You know, it's like there is a place where you kind of fight through your adolescence. You fight through kind of some of your hormonal stages biologically. And then you get to this place. If you are connected with, you know, a woman who's mature and growing too, you're just like, okay, this is normal life. Wow, look at that person.
See, I think the best. I think the best part of all of this is the fact that the other perspective is included into the conversation. Like that right there is the win. That right. Wait a second, if all we do is talk about women as stumbling blocks and objects, including this part into the conversation, because think about it. Think about our culture before it was acceptable for like SI swimsuit issue coming out.
Right.
Then women had to, to be proper, they had to wear skirts all the way down to their ankles. And so that may have helped the guys, but it certainly was not good for females. And so now women have more liberties and it's way more acceptable to be a little more free with your bodies, but the guys have to work a little harder. I mean, it kind of is what it is, in my opinion.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's a good sub. I'm sorry. You got a really good subject going there because this whole idea where we have to like, okay, the men have to be here and the women have to be over here. And we talk to the guys about the guy stuff and the women are over here. No, we're all adults. We should be in the same room. We should be talking about this. And cause we all love Jesus. We're all trying to love him and love other people. And how do we love each other? And how do we build up each other? And you know what? The bigger issue for me, and I talk about this in the book, is how do you come together, kind of rise above all this kind of stuff, and really get into partnership, men and women, to fight the real evils and battles and take action. One of the comments that somebody made in one of the podcasts that I listened to, by the way, I'm an All In member. Did you know that?
You are not.
I am too. Okay, go check. I'm an All-In member. But one of you guys
cross reference that for me.
This is a very cool podcast. But somebody said on one of the podcasts, they said Christianity would be better if there was more action. If we took more action, if we did a little less of this and a little bit more action and together. But here's the thing about gender wars. Basically, Christianity functions within the gender war. Like women, I've found, because I talk at women's conferences, they are listening to whatever the cultural narrative is about men. They're soaking in it. And they kind of, they may not say it openly, but they think that way. And then here you got the guys over here, and we're working on things in these silos in as women and men versus kind of rising above the gender war. And just kind of working together to support each other and do good. Mm-hmm. And I talk about that in the book when I talk about Barak and Deborah in Judges 5. It's a really interesting picture of a man and a woman working together to defeat evil.
Yeah, I think we get caught up sometimes in this identity, and sometimes it's even identity politics, and it does kind of create a us versus them as opposed to working together. And that's what I'm even getting at. That's what I think. Like, you're right. If men and women are in the same room, you have way more opportunity to learn more, to hear more, to experience more, to see somebody else's perspective inside. And I think oftentimes we don't do that, especially in the church. You're right. In the church, it's, oftentimes we do separate completely and never incorporate each other. I even believe there are times, like with my True Man events, I believe there's a time where men can feel comfortable around men and be really open, honest, and vulnerable. I think we need those times, but also we have to have each other. And that's exactly the idea of marriage, right? A man and a woman coming together so that you can experience things more fruitfully rather than alone or separated, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's good.
Let's talk about your new book. Tell us about it.
Dangerous Good.
By the way, he's a confirmed All-In member.
Yeah, Reeve confirmed. Kenny's actual All-In member to the BC Club.
Hey, he needs to be part of our commercials.
We get you to do some liners.
Okay, are you guys building a brand? Are you pushing product? Are you guys trying to just build this name for yourselves, do other stuff? I mean, are you guys, all right. So the book. So I start off the book talking about a Polaroid that I found of me with the Batman helmet on. And, I've talked to millions of guys, and I always do this little survey. How many of you guys ever owned in the past or own now any superhero, anything in the past or right now? And literally 90% of the room raises their hand. Mm-hmm. And it goes to the ethos of wanting to stick it to evil, wanting to deliver justice, wanting to have special power, and kind of that ethos that's there. That doesn't have to be experienced you know, plunking down dough to go see Iron Man or Avengers and stuff like that. If you know Jesus, that's the life you're called to. And one of the aspects that I love about Dangerous Good is that it talks about Jesus in the sense of what kind of a male culture did he walk into? He walked into kind of this toxic, religious, toxic, misogynistic kind of culture that thought, thank God I'm not a woman. Thank God I'm not a kid. And thank God I'm not one of those Gentiles.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. immediately he just flipped it on its head, started protecting and defending women, said, no, 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 let the children come. And he touched them, he blessed them. And he started on parables about the Good Samaritan. You know, no way. And just works it out. So Dangerous Good, he's the original Dangerous Good guy. And when he is, you know, declares his ministry of who he's going to be in Luke 4, says the Spirit of the Lord's upon me, it's about being dangerous with goodness, everything that he says. And so it's a call to this generation of men just to be like Christ in that way, where you see him going, turning broken male culture on its head, but loving people and just taking action and doing things that are unequivocally good. And in that era of hashtag Me Too and demonstrations all around the world and marches and all that stuff, you know, this world needs less guys talking about Christianity and more guys doing things that are unequivocally good, like Jesus. And so I feel like if there's ever going to be a turn in perspective toward Christianity and men, it's not going to be words. It's going to be through people receiving life and being blessed by the actions of people who are taking steps in the character of Christ. And so that's kind of, there's going to be a Dangerous Good tour. We're going to do city transformation conferences. We're going to line up with partners doing good in the city, launch these fellowships of guys who are committed to others. That's kind of the vision behind the book. It's 18 years in the making.
What are you thinking about the term toxic masculinity? Mm-hmm. Do you think it's appropriate? You think you're seeing some of that within the church?
Well, here's the issue. Men have always been toxic.
What's your working definition of that? Does anybody have one?
It's just, you know, we're broken, imperfect guys. You know, that's, it just goes to, you know, our imperfections, our flaws, our shortcomings. But I feel like, you know, when you go to an Ivy League school and they make freshmen take a class on toxic masculinity, and the worst three words you can say to a guy is be a man, it's just so ideological. It's like you're talking to an ideologue. And when you talk to an ideologue who labels men toxic, you go, okay, all men are not toxic. All right. I don't know what happened to you. And a lot of times the most vociferous people who talk about that have been so wounded by men. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's where that comes from. It's a projection of their own experiences, either an uncle or a dad or a boyfriend or something. It all comes out. I mean, I read an article online yesterday, a feminist professor. It's just like, why can't we hate men?
Right. Yeah.
That was an article in the Washington Post.
Yeah. It was like a teacher, professor at Fresno. It was in Washington Post. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
I think there's the normal range of people, and then there's people in the margins at the top and the bottom. And I feel like toxic masculinity exists in the academy more than it exists in the real world.
You mean the labeling of things as toxic, not that the people in the academy are toxic men.
That's right.
Right. So
exactly.
Are there things we agree on that we'd qualify as toxic masculinity or some things?
Totally.
Know, what would they
be? People label as toxic masculinity. Yeah, what toxic masculinity is strength without compassion and character. It's like broken alpha male, mm-hmm. all right? The problem is that feminism reacted to broken alpha male, strength right. without character and compassion, because women were suffering, and we should have had the feminist movement. That's the whole thing. I'm glad we had it because it assigned vision and value to women. The problem with reactions is that they're not solutions. Mm-hmm. You still have men. They still need to make better choices. They still need to treat women better, blah, blah, blah. And so now what feminism is doing is it's kind of coming back to the middle, and they're realizing, wow, we created this type of guy who's more compassionate, and loving, but he lacks the strength. And what they're looking for is not broken alpha male, strength without character. And they're not really looking for the guy who has all character and no strength. They're looking for the combo. And the combo is Jesus. He's tough. He's tender. He's strong. He's servant oriented. He's courageous, went to the cross. He's compassionate. And so I feel like Dangerous Good is kind of like that third wave of man that, God, the world is starved for a guy like that. I don't know if you agree.
I do agree that it's unacceptable to me to get to the point where it is a bad thing to say you need to be a more of a man or to be a man. Like, you know, it's something I can very much in certain situations hear myself wanting to encourage somebody. You've got to be a man and figure this out or something. There's qualities there that are real right. that I wouldn't want right. to let go of right. or turn into an insult.
Right.
And I'd go farther right. than that a little bit
but
to
is,
say
it,
that.
Is some, that assuming women don't have that? When you
no,
say that,
I mean, you could be a real woman too when you got to really do
yeah,
the right
okay. stuff. I feel like I could say that same to my daughters. You got to be a woman here.
Yeah.
You got to step up.
Right. But whatever, I'm just saying the qualities of right. men and women are different. And yeah. they're both like when you say a broken alpha, right. that's right because you can be a man who was born genetically tough and strong with a strong jaw. And that's not every man. There's everything across the spectrum. That doesn't make
no,
you good
right.
or more valuable
right.
or anything, but a
that's
powerful,
right.
strong, right. 6'8", muscle-bound guy who is broken is horrifically dangerous. He's horrifically
yes.
dangerous instead of powerful and awesome and just right. one type of awesome man. There's lots of types, and it's not linear. The more muscles you have, the better man. It's not that. Not that at all. But there are some qualities that are more associated with maleness that doesn't make them negative qualities. All the way down to at my kids' preschool, there's a boy playing with an airplane and smashing two together, and the teachers are correcting him saying, no, no, no. And that makes me go insane. Like
yeah.
that, I want to lose my
oh,
mind
yeah.
to squash.
That'll drive you crazy.
Yeah. Boys can like explosions, and girls can like explosions. I don't care. It's totally nothing. It's not. There's not prescriptive.
Right.
I'm not saying what a man is, but for four
right.
young boys to want to play rough is not bad. It is not bad. And so that's
not
where that's kind of where I draw
well,
the line.
I mean, here's the research. Here's the research. My buddy Brad at the University of Virginia. He's the one guy in all of the university system who's done the research on boys and girls and play
mm-hmm.
and the role of dads in that. And that is uniquely a dad thing
right.
to be rough and tumble
mm-hmm. yeah.
and to throw kids up in the air. And it's one of those things and children need that,
yeah.
you know? And so it's one of those things where when you talk about toxic masculinity, you know, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's what about the guys who are in SEAL Team 6 and fighting the bad guys? Are those guys bad? And it's not just physical strength or the
right.
ability to shoot a gun. If you have power, if
it's
you have
power,
influence,
right.
like Harvey Weinstein or Matt Lauer, that's strength too.
That's right.
But if you have that power and strength without character, then you abuse it. Mm-hmm. You know, and
you're
so,
going to destroy
you know, well,
people
yeah.
if you squash what that
you
particular man was supposed to be.
Yes.
If you squash that,
yes.
you're harming him in society.
It.
If there's
yeah.
another man that has a different
yeah.
build or character, or my daughters, I'm super rough with them.
How about this?
They're very masculine. Okay, good. Whatever. I'm just talking about
yeah.
masculinity
yeah.
itself. My daughters possess some masculinity. Okay, I want them to be tough
right.
or rough and tumble. No big deal.
That's right.
Well, I think the other
that's
thing,
right.
too, y'all are saying, I appreciate what you said, Kenny, about the strength. I think people are intimidated and fearful of men in general strength. And so what they end up doing, rather than harness it for good, they try to shut it down and squash
right.
it, like you said,
yeah.
so that it's a type of control.
You got it.
The other side or
yes.
whatever, whoever is trying to control the strength so to get it to use it for their for them. So they're using the strength
yes.
also in a very negative, bad way. That's what's
yeah,
very dangerous.
That's right. Instead of just, hey, you have there, you know, you're made by God and for God. You're made unique. You have an identity, and you know your gifts and strengths as a man or as a woman. Why can't you just appreciate those? Because really, the main theme we're talking about here is just if you have influence, power, or strength, but you lack character. You've got 25-year-old, 12-year-old, a 35-year-old, 13-year-old, and a 50-year-old, 15-year-old, and that's what culture is reacting to. Guys with man-size power, man-size responsibilities,
right.
man-size influence, and boy-size character.
Yeah, that's toxic.
That's
I agree.
Toxic.
Yeah, I agree.
One of the things you talk about in your book too is that men have been on the sidelines for too long, and I was wondering, I didn't know if you could speak into
what most people say.
I know that you're right. Most people don't say that, but I kind of agree with you. I feel like men have been kind of emasculated in the Christian world, in the church world, and just a lot of times women bring the men to the church. Women now have taken even over a lot of the spiritual leading of the family. And how do we get there, and how do we teach men? Because, I mean, they've been on the sidelines maybe so long they don't even know what to say.
But are you skipping over, or where's your acknowledgement of men control almost everything, though? Is that not true?
You're right. Men control almost
everything.
I'm just
saying, are you speaking about something very specific, sidelined and spiritual? I mean,
I would say in the church world, in the church culture, men are often way more quiet.
What constant percentage of leadership?
There's a good-looking, well-spoken, thoughtful leader, and men oftentimes feel like, well, he's the guy that can do it, mm-hmm. and I'll just stay here by the side. Yep. My wife likes it. The kids like, I know we need to connect with God and people. So in the Christian culture, for me, I've seen a lot of men feel pushed out of churches because there's not really a job, that there's no challenge or something for when I do these.
No, you got it. Okay, stop right there, because yep. church isn't perceived as a place for a guy to be great. It's just not.
Yeah.
It's a place where women and kids go. That's true statistically too, guys, by the way. You've got women, read their Bible 30% more, they share their faith 30% more. I mean, just do the George Barna study on the differences between men and women, spiritual disciplines, all that stuff. We get our juice in the world. We don't get our juice in the church.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's outside. One of the things I like about your podcast is that you tell Christians that, hey, there's this whole world out there to explore. There's a world outside of church. And I love that, because it's okay to explore that world and be a part of the body of Christ at the same time. It's okay to be a great businessman, and you can be a great follower of Jesus too. But the main reason why there's a perception, and it's funny, you guys heard of Drew Marshall in Canada? He's kind of like you guys. He calls it the chickification of the church. What's happened is that, guys, you look at the investment in men. If 93% of a family follows the guy's decision to know the Lord, and 17% of the family follows the mom's decision, and 3.5% mm-hmm. of the family follows a kid's decision to follow Christ, men are the best bang for the buck deal. But you would think that churches would put resources into having a men's pastor, discipling guys, but less than a fraction of 1% of all churches. Mm-hmm. Mine's an anomaly. We, in our membership class, we say we're very masculine friendly. We believe the greatest gift we can give our community is a spiritually strong and emotionally mature and relationally committed guy. And we don't apologize for that.
Yeah.
So we have this thing called the Beast Feast, and we have, we put a lot of energy and time into men. But most churches don't see statistically how the family really works. If they did, they would go, oh man, we kind of got to bump up that level. There's a lot of programming for kids, a lot of Beth Moore studies and Priscilla Shire and all that stuff. Not a lot of stuff for the kids.
Yeah. Are you familiar with,
I see that.
Are you familiar with, Mark Driscoll?
Of course.
What
of course.
Do you see him as someone who crossed some lines that weren't intended to be crossed when it comes to a healthy, because I learned a lot of healthy stuff from him as far as masculinity is concerned, but I was blind to all of the bad stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I mean, could you articulate what you think some of those lines were?
And this is the thing that doesn't work in men's ministry in the long run. It might get a crowd out. It might jack people up. It might inspire people, but guys don't progress in Christ when it's all kind of this prophetic ethos and martial spirit. And, in fact, I feel like that plays on the immature aspects of man, when you totally just, like Mark was just so, he's like a, he should wear, camel hair, clothes and eat locusts and, because of the way he talks.
Yeah.
He talks so strong and so prophetically. But here's the thing. Anytime you see someone who's that far out there over the tip of his skis in energy, I always kind of like, I'm kind of like, okay, let's watch and see.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let's see what happens over the long haul. And sure enough, and I think a really good interview to watch is his interview with Brian Houston post.
Right. Yeah.
Post-mortem. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good.
Yeah, so see if we all agree with this statement. See if this is, if we're on the same page with this. I would say that currently in America, the church is primarily a product, and it is primarily a product for women, and it is a product for women created by men who are in charge of it. Anybody disagree with any of that?
Don't disagree.
Okay.
It's turned into that. I don't think that was the intent.
What I believe it to be.
Yeah.
In general,
but here's the thing:
Christianity has become a product.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a product for women, and is a product created by and run by and led by men. Do we agree with all that?
Yeah. I mean, for example, the church that we go to,
and that's not every
church.
My
wife got us to go there, and I only agreed because I actually liked the music. And I was like, okay, I'm a musician. I'll go here for that. Yeah. Now, I do think the people are good. I don't think they realize that, though. What you're saying,
nobody's going to agree with me. I trapped y'all all into agreeing with me. Nobody on earth wants to admit what I just said.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. That's what
I will. And I'm the pastor. Okay. Guys, here's the thing. Pastors, okay, and I'm a pastor. Pastors are insecure. Many pastors, the majority.
Whatever, man. That's not true. That's not true.
No, listen to me. I'll tell you why.
I'm kidding. I'm a pastor too.
When they let dudes into their shop, and guys start poking around, and they start looking and evaluating him and analyzing him. You know, I've talked to many pastors who really won't pour into men, because they're afraid that it's going to create this club that's going to analyze him,
right,
and throw rocks at him.
Right.
You know, and there is that. And then you look at how isolated they are. I mean, if the stats are right, 55% of all pastors have visited a porn site in the last year. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, who's really knocking on your door? It's safe. Let's just say what it is. It's safe to start a Christian school, safe to have kids programs, safe to let your women's ministry grow crazy. It is unsafe to mobilize a spirit-empowered community of men and turn them loose to go kill something for Jesus.
Right.
It is not safe. It's not politically correct either to invest in guys. So that's why we have to kind of take the discussion of masculinity out of culture and connect it to eternity again. Because when you connect masculinity to eternity, now you can put it in its proper context and just say, are men living out life in Christ, and are they growing in the character of Christ, and is their conduct reflect their growth in the character of Christ? But a lot of pastors are really super insecure about that. I know that because I'm a men's guy. And when I talk with pastors who have no vision for men, they back off. They don't even want to talk to me.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons the men, when they control things and have leadership, insecurity leads you directly to a very easy conclusion that I don't want to. I mean, this is just pure evolutionary psychology. You don't want a bunch of other cocks around. You want to be the head rooster with a bunch of hens. I mean, that's just going to play out. Yeah. That's always happens that way.
Not
too.
Bad. No, not bad. Not bad. That's not bad.
Hey, I want to congratulate you on kind of leading the way with the best marketing campaign Christians could ever have. As you came out with a successful product, and then you just changed it to every young men's battle, every young woman's battle, every woman's battle, every uncle's battle. I mean, you nailed it.
Yeah, that's right. Every uncle's battle.
Kenny, this has been great. Thank you for your time, and I really do thank you for being a fan of the podcast and being a supporter.
Oh, man, I'm all in.
Yeah, that's big time.
I love
that's
you big guys. Time.
The book is called Dangerous Good. When is it out, and where can people find it?
Pre-order on Amazon. It comes out July 3rd, or just go to everymanministries.com.
Everyman Ministry. Kenny, we appreciate it, man. May we have you on
again
in the future.
Love you guys. Keep doing what you're doing.
We appreciate it, dude.
Keep doing what you're doing. Love it. All right, man.
Thanks. Thanks, Kenny. Kenny Luck, everybody.
Woo!
That guy is, he's got the energy, you know. That
I think every man's battle should be a book in the Bible. Like, I'm gonna appeal, J.I. Packer, I think he edited the English Standard.
I think he compiled it. And then you could put it with Song of Solomon, I suppose.
right after Song of Solomon.
The I like Kenny's energy because he's, I mean, he's somewhat of a performer, I guess you could say. Like, he comes on, it's hilarious. He's in the BC Club, joined the BC Club, and comes out just, I don't know, I just like people when they're, you know, comfortable on air. And not, I like his attitude, I would put it that way. Okay, you know what? We got something fun to do, guys. We did it once a few episodes ago and finally got some traction. We've been having BC Club members send in questions, and we're going to take them live here. Now, you can only do this, of course, if you're in the BC Club. So before we begin, I'll remind you that you should be joining the BC Club if you haven't already. Or, hell, you may have canceled. You should rejoin, I would say. I always forget that little segment of the demographic, that dirty little secret, that some people have been in the BC Club and left, which is really hard, really hard, you know, really hard for me personally. But you could come back, and then you could ask a question, and then you
yeah,
could
and then advice. And then there's some people that left because you don't like us anymore and you're offended by something that you said. Jesus said to love your enemies.
Right.
So just join back because you love us.
So you're either our enemy and should join the BC Club, or you're our friend, in which case you're in the club. So it's pretty
So if you're not in the club, you're outside of God's will, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah, you're being disobedient, I guess you could say. But in any case, thebcclub.com is where you go figure that out. And then you'll join our Facebook group, and then you'll get to know the real community.
Yes,
is
you
the,
will. Praise
you know,
God.
The heartbeat of Bad Christian. Anyway, we've got some questions here, so let's take them, guys. Beautiful. Y'all ready?
I'm looking forward to these questions. Yes. It'll be like small group.
Well, we'll see. We don't. I haven't heard the questions themselves yet. We'll see.
Well, let's just pretend.
Hey, this is Serge. I'm from McAllen, Texas. That's about 10 minutes north of the Mexico-United States border. So it's like really down south Texas. And my question is for really any of you guys. It doesn't really matter. I know that you guys have been deconstructing for a while now. And so I was wondering if you guys have done some construction of your faith, or do you consider the deconstruction even as part of the construction of your new faith, or what does that look like for you guys? Because at some point, deconstruction has to involve construction, right?
Toby refuses to use the word deconstruct, so let's
really?
Let Toby answer. Yeah,
I don't like the word deconstruction. Really, it doesn't really make sense. You're not. I mean, I understand the idea of you're pulling things away, but it in the construction, if you had a building, you wouldn't pull out bad stuff and there's anything left. It's just you're just building a new building or something like that. It would only be reconstruction, but I still feels like a new form of Christianese to me. I will say this: no matter what, I cannot escape that humans are real.
I wish y'all could see Toby's face.
real fucked up, not good. They make a lot of bad, selfish decisions. And so I think we need a savior. There's nothing that on earth that shows me more that a savior exists than humans.
That like philosophy doesn't
wait,
make
did,
sense.
Hold on a second. Let's stick a little closer to the question. Is there anything you said yet answer the question at all?
Well, he's asking, do you consider deconstruction and reconstruction a part of your faith journey?
He's saying you've been deconstructing for years. Are you going to construct?
Toby's laying down a foundation, you bastard.
I'm saying there ain't no deconstruction.
So you deny that we have been deconstructing on this podcast for a couple of years?
My foundation has always been that there was a Savior, Jesus Christ. So that it hasn't changed at all to me. And
right.
I just can't escape it
right.
No matter what I think. Sometimes I want to. Sometimes I say I don't believe. Sometimes all this stuff. But I keep coming back to that. So the idea of something being a construction or a deconstruction or a reconstruction, all those words seem a little bit like, oh, I'm on this thing to find the right answer. I think there isn't almost a right answer. The only thing I can think is humans are fucked up and terrible. And so the answer is outside of us.
Okay, can I help? Let's see if we can use the construction analogy since we're using that. Construction, deconstruction, foundation are all words that you've used there. So are you saying, though, in that analogy, you have a foundation, it's concrete poured form foundation. That's Jesus, Savior, humans are bad.
Yep.
That's your foundation,
all the
right?
Electricity is run, all the pipe.
But you used to live in a big house that was on top of that foundation that had a bunch of dumb shit in it. And so you pulled out the 80s cabinets and pulled up the linoleum. That's the deconstruction. That was all the stuff about you can't go to movies, you can't drink, all that.
Let me clear it up for you. I just think it's dumb shit now. I used to not, and who's to say which Toby is right?
But I'm saying you've remodeled your house.
Yeah, I might be really wrong right now.
How do you not call that deconstruction?
I might be okay, if you want to say a remodel, okay, maybe that's the better.
Okay, we're not deconstructing, Serge. We're remodeling over here.
Yeah, I watch a lot of HGTV. Yeah. He is God television is what I like to call it. You remodel your stuff inside, but that still doesn't make it, oh, now I'm a better person, or now I'm right, or now I see now I'm woke. All that stuff I think is bullshit. Like, I really think you're just figuring stuff. Sometimes you like something, sometimes you don't, and there's a little bit of truth in all kinds of things.
You like the way you got your house decorated and modeled. Like, I mean, there's some weird stuff, some bad stuff, but you didn't demolish the house. You just been remodeling, and that's everybody does that forever, right?
But Matt, real quick for kicks, does it make sense to you and Toby's like, just because we need a savior doesn't mean one exists? Like, I've never have gotten that. Do you understand that?
I'm understanding your question. Sorry.
If you ask Toby, do you believe in God? He'll say yes, because we need a savior.
Right.
I don't get it.
What's not to get?
How does that?
I need
prove
some lunch
to
too. I hope I get it.
And right? You will.
And I intend to, but I could be wrong. I'm not positive, but I hope that lunch is in my future, and I need it.
I'm saying. We aren't going to save ourselves. Humans are so screwed up and so potentially selfish and all make wrong decisions at some point in our life, which is the human experience. I'm not saying I'm not even calling that evil or awful. I'm just saying it's part of the experience.
Yep.
The only possible chance I could see of being some of them being true is something outside of us saying, you got it wrong.
Right. But so Serge is asking, but what he's saying is y'all do a bunch of negative shit toward all this tradition and the Bible and the way people have always seen it. Are you ever going to do some positive shit in the future as if that was part of the plan? And I love your answer.
I thought that's what the podcast was.
Right. What Toby's saying is we're adjusting, we're updating, we're moving. We don't think of it as demolition particularly. I know that word gets used. But remodeling is a much better term. It's updating cabinets is what we're doing. And we like it better this way. And so, no, I don't intend to go back and put down stupid shit that I thought was stupid.
And
so,
here's the stark reality. Whether we like it or not, fundamentalism will always be a part of us in some way, shape, or form. There's no way we ever rid ourselves. And I'm not even saying we operate through
that's
that
all
context.
Humans, though, then, not just us. Mm-hmm.
Next question.
Exactly.
Here we go.
Exactly.
Yep. Hi, guys. Natalie here. So we were wondering what useless weird skill do you guys have? Bye-bye.
Useless weird skill do we have? That one is, I'm telling
Dickie you. Dickie the Duck for me, man.
I'm going to tell you this. Useless weird skills, they may be a thing of the past. We may be the last generation that actually knows how to do a lot of really. If you're a male that was born in the 70s and 80s, you probably know the all-time most amount of ridiculous shit that is completely useless that you spent hours of real effort and practice and skill development on. I'm talking about stuff like ping pong,
removing your finger. Hey, Sonny, look, I'm taking my finger off. Oh my gosh!
No, just
so
think
real.
Of things that you've spent time developing skills for certain, you know, video games or you know, building model cars. I mean, there's been so many things that you spent time on in our bored youth with no internet or connectivity or ability to learn or educate yourself on a skill that you'd want to use in your life. You know, guitar is one of those skills that eventually somehow we turned into you make money with it or something. But that, you know, tennis. Just name it. There's a million skills that you have that are completely useless, that are a product of the era we grew up in. Can y'all think of some?
Well, I mean, yeah. Like, if you're talking about, like, recording to tape.
Right.
Or,
oh, my gosh. Yeah, I know.
I knew how to record songs off the radio with my tape player. I'd play, you know what I mean? Gary and I would listen to music on but I think she's also talking about, like, little things, like Joey said. Joey can do the duck voice. I can do this thing. This sounds so gross, and you can't see it, but I can make my tongue super huge. Like, I can blow up my tongue, and I scare my kids with it like it's a snake coming out of my mouth. It's not long, but it's just huge. That's going to be a BC out of context comment right there. But join the club if you want to know what that is.
The worst is the ones that were professional when the industries go away. So everybody else will have that too. I went in to record. I worked on an Acceptance last record, and I went into the studio, and it was this giant SSL board and all this analog gear in this really cool studio. And I was going in to engineer it, and Sprinkle was recording it. And I walked in the place, and I was like, well, I don't know how to use all this gear, you know, like, all, you know, the big spaceship looking stuff. And then I sat down for a few minutes. I was like, Yeah, I do. I forgot. But yes, I do know how. I know every knob. I know how to program it. I know how to write the automation and get the, you know, I knew how to do all that stuff that's like a high level real skill that people go to school for 4 years or 8 years and pay $80,000. And it's completely irrelevant to the world, even of music creation. The industry's got, like, we don't need people to run those spaceship engineering things anymore. And I was so bummed out to realize I have the necessary hours on this professional skill that is now completely useless. It's so depressing. Like, oh, I totally know how to do it at a, you know, professional level, and it's worth basically zero.
All right, next question.
Here we go. Last one.
Sup, family. It's your boy Heath from Tennessee. And I have a question for Joey. Joey, do you think Mark Zuckerberg is adult-sized? Because, you know, he's thicker than a cup of Chobani yogurt. You know that boy got that wagon. Thank you.
So, Joey, the question is clearly to you.
Well, clearly,
Joey, do
my
you have
dad
the ability,
is the one to
Do you
ask.
Have the ability to notice adult size
no,
or not?
That's like, my dad. I don't understand why people think I'm the expert. I went to my dad. If I was the expert, I wouldn't have gone to my
that's
dad.
True. That's true.
So you recommend Zuckerberg send a dick pic to Virgil? Do you want to facilitate
I don't
that?
See why
That'd be
not.
The way to
he
handle
did a great,
it.
My dad did a great job with me, so I don't see why not. So anybody that wants, it's virgilsvinsong12@gmail.com. Just send your dick pic and he will respond.
He needs to.
He's
his own
retired.
Website.
He doesn't have anything else to do.
If his calling is to empower and encourage young men and boys.
You
and,
know what I was
and here's
saying,
how
and
the website
a
works. VirgilSvinsong.com. He's passionate about caring and empowering and encouraging young men. Yeah. So
I did
here's
tell,
how it works.
I did tell y'all that one time I finally broke it to him. I said, Dad, do you remember when I, because this is the first time we've ever talked about it. So you remember when I showed, and he just kind of, he smiled and shook his head and it was really uncomfortable. I said, I talked about that on podcast. He said, you did. Like, he just could not. But I mean, his generation, not only was he just, any person would have been surprised having to see their son's wee-wee, but the fact that I talked about it, he just couldn't believe it. It was just outside of his realm of understanding.
Thank you for that question, Heath. And you guys, for sure, if you want to join the BC Club, come join us. We're waiting on you. All right. Thank you, everybody. What else y'all got? Anything?
That's all I got.
All right. See you on the flip side.
Peace.